All right, so today we're going deep on a case that really shows how tricky it can be when the legal system meets cultural differences. State v. Cargar back in 1996, a Maine Supreme Judicial Court case.
Oh, yeah, that one's a classic.
Yeah, and it's not just some old case either. It helps us see how judges figure out what laws really mean and how things like, the situation someone's in really matters.
Totally. And for anyone who wants to get how law works, like not just the words on paper, but like in real life, Cargar is a must read.
Yeah.
It shows how tough it is to use laws when people come from different cultures.
Right.
And this de minimis thing we'll talk about, it's like a safety valve so the law doesn't go crazy and punish people unfairly.
Have you ever thought about how a law that seems straightforward could be applied differently because of where someone's from?
Oh, absolutely.
Or when something that's totally normal in one culture is a crime in another?
It's fascinating stuff.
It is. And that's what we're getting into today with Steve E. Cargar.
Yeah, this case from way back in 96 in Maine, it shows how courts have to like look beyond the literal words of the law sometimes to get to the heart of it, to make sure things are fair. So let's set the stage here. State v. Cargar decided in 1996 by the Maine Supreme Judicial Court. Big case often comes up when we talk about how culture can like totally change how we see and apply the law. And right at the center of it all is this idea of a de minimis statute, which basically lets courts be a bit flexible, to avoid results that just don't feel right.
Exactly. And the case, it really comes from this clash between a cultural practice and something the law says you can't do. The facts are super important to get why the court decided what it did. So we're talking about Mohammed Cargar, a refugee from Afghanistan who came to Maine with his family. And the thing that started all this legal trouble was him kissing his son's penis, his 18-month-old son. And I mean, obviously, from a typical American perspective, that raises red flags right away, thoughts about child abuse and all that.
So after this happened, there was a babysitter who saw it. She told her mom, and then a neighbor reported it to the police. And on top of that, they found a photograph showing the same thing. So Cargar ended up being charged with gross sexual assault under Maine law.
That's pretty heavy stuff. But this is where understanding where he comes from, like his culture, becomes so important.
It's crucial.
At the trial, Cargar presented a bunch of evidence, like expert testimony and stuff, explaining that in Afghan culture, kissing a young son's penis is a common thing. Like a normal way to show affection and family bonding.
It's like ingrained in their culture.
And it's not seen as sexual at all.
You're not at all.
It's wild how different perspectives can be on something that seems so obvious from one point of view.
It really is. And the defense, they really pushed the fact that there was zero sexual intent behind what Cargar did. And this goes right up against how Maine's gross sexual assault law was written back then, because it didn't specifically say you had to prove there was sexual intent to convict someone.
So, even if he didn't mean it that way, he could still be found guilty.
Yeah, potentially. And that's a big problem with just focusing on the words of the law and not the bigger picture.
So you have this head-on collision. A totally normal thing in one culture is a serious crime in another. What happened at the trial?
Well, even with all the cultural evidence and the experts saying there was no sexual intent, the court found Cargar guilty. On both counts of gross sexual assault, his lawyers had also tried to get the case dismissed using Maine's de minimis statute.
I remember you mentioned that.
They argued that even if technically what he did broke the law, it was so minor given his culture that it shouldn't be prosecuted.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But that motion was denied too.
So the trial didn't go his way at all. What was the appeal about then? What do they take to the Maine Supreme Judicial Court?
The main question for the Supreme Court was, did the trial court mess up by not even thinking about using the de minimis statute in this really unusual situation, where a cultural practice with no bad intentions seems to go against a broadly written criminal law?
So this idea of a de minimis dismissal, it's like a key part of what the Supreme Court was thinking about. Can you break down what this statute is all about?
Sure thing. So Maine's de minimis statute, it's Section 12 of Title 17A of their laws. It basically gives the court a way to drop a case even if someone technically broke the law.
So they're like, yeah, you did it, but we're not going to punish you for it.
Exactly. It's for those situations where going after someone with the full force of the law would just be wrong.
Interesting. So what are those situations? What has to be true for de minimis dismissal to happen?
Well, the law lays out three conditions.
Okay.
The first one is the person's behavior has to be something that's generally accepted or tolerated, even if it technically breaks the rules.
So like a minor thing that everyone kind of looks the other way on.
Right. And it can't be something the person whose interest was infringed expressly said no to.
Makes sense. What's the second condition?
The second one is the person's actions didn't actually cause any harm or threaten the harm the law was trying to prevent, or the harm was so tiny it's not worth punishing.
So it's about the actual impact or lack of impact of what they did.
Right.
Gotcha. And the third one?
The last one is kind of like a catch-all. It says the behavior has to be something the legislature probably didn't even think about when they wrote the law.
Like a loophole almost.
Kinda. It recognizes that lawmakers can't predict every crazy situation that might come up.
Yeah, that's true. So when a court's deciding whether to use this de minimis thing, what are they supposed to consider specifically?
Well, the Maine Supreme Court in the Cargar case, they said courts have to look at a whole bunch of factors like the person's culture and beliefs, whether they meant to do something criminal.
Like in this case, if there was any sexual intent.
Exactly. Whether any harm was actually done to the child, the context of the actions, like was it in public or within the family?
Right.
And ultimately what the lawmakers were trying to achieve with the law in question.
It's like they have to consider the whole picture, not just the action itself.
Exactly. And as the court said, they have to pay attention to both what the person is accused of doing and all the circumstances surrounding it.
Gotcha. So knowing all that, how did the Maine Supreme Court ultimately view the Cargar case? Why did they decide to overturn his conviction?
Well, their decision really came down to a few key points. They put a lot of weight on the fact that this cultural practice was a family thing done openly at home.
Right. Not like some secret creepy thing.
Yeah. And of course, the fact that there was no harm done was a huge factor.
Of course.
The court pointed out that there was absolutely zero evidence of Cargar having any sexual intentions or that his son was harmed in any way.
Makes sense.
And they figured that the Maine lawmakers, when they wrote the law about gross sexual assault, they probably never thought about criminalizing this kind of harmless family affection rooted in tradition.
That makes sense.
Oh, and you mentioned that quote from the case earlier.
Yeah, I did. What was it again?
They said, "The conduct remains criminal, but the circumstances demand leniency."
Hmm. That's pretty powerful.
It is, because they're acknowledging that technically what Cargar did could be seen as breaking the law, but the specific situation, the culture, the lack of bad intentions, it all meant that punishing him would be totally unfair.
So it's like the law has to bend a little sometimes to avoid a result that just doesn't make sense.
Exactly.
It sounds like the Supreme Court was way more open-minded than the trial court, which seemed to take a very literal view of the law.
You could say that, yeah, the trial court seemed fixated on the physical act itself as the crime.
Right.
But the Supreme Court took a step back and looked at the purpose of the law, which is to stop sexual abuse and protect kids.
Yeah.
And they realized that applying it in this specific cultural context would actually go against what the law was meant to do.
Right. It wouldn't protect anyone in this case.
Exactly. They got that the law has a job to do. And in this specific instance, a conviction just wouldn't make sense.
So looking beyond this one case, what does State v. Cargar mean for like law students?
Uh-huh.
What are the big takeaways here?
Well, first off, Cargar really shows how important the de minimis statute is. It's like a safety valve in the legal system.
Right.
It lets courts use their judgment to prevent the law from being applied too rigidly or in ways that just seem absurd.
Like common sense, basically.
Yeah. It's a reminder that laws, even criminal laws, aren't meant to be applied without considering the context.
And it shows how important it is for legal professionals to be culturally aware.
Right. Wow. Absolutely. Lawyers, judges, everyone in the legal system needs to be sensitive to different cultural practices.
Yeah.
Because understanding where someone comes from can be super important in figuring out if what they did, even though it might technically be against the law, really deserves to be punished.
Like, you can't assume everyone sees the world the same way.
Exactly.
You mentioned something earlier about a nuance in the case. Can you explain that again?
Oh, yeah. It's really important to understand that the Maine Supreme Court wasn't saying that kissing a child's genitals is okay.
Right. They weren't condoning that.
No, their decision was specifically about this one case.
Right.
The specific situation where it was a cultural thing within a family with zero signs of anything sexual or harmful.
Yeah.
The court just recognized that making this specific act a crime in this context would completely miss the point of the gross sexual assault law.
It's about intent, right?
Yeah, exactly. And the fact that there was no evidence at all that Cargar had any sexual intentions was huge for the court.
Yeah, it sounds like they really tried to understand what the lawmakers were trying to prevent with that law.
Absolutely. They looked beyond the actual words of the law to the bigger goal, which was to protect kids from sexual abuse.
Right.
And they decided that what Cargar did, given his culture and the fact that there was no harm, didn't fit with what the law was meant to do.
And all that expert testimony about Afghan culture must have been super important in helping the court understand things.
Oh, yeah. For sure. It gave them the context they needed to see Cargar's actions not as potential abuse, but as normal parental affection in his culture.
It changed how they viewed the whole thing.
It totally did.
So even though his actions could be seen as fitting the definition of the law, the de minimis statute gave them that wiggle room to say, hey, this is an exception.
Precisely. They understood that the law is written broadly, and the de minimis statute is there for those weird cases where applying the law strictly would lead to a result that's just wrong and unfair.
It's like a fail-safe.
Yeah, and situations that the lawmakers probably never even imagined when they wrote the law.
Cargar really makes you think about this challenge for legal systems. How do we protect vulnerable people like kids while also respecting different cultures?
Yeah, it's a tough one.
Are there clear rules we can follow, or does each case need to be looked at individually?
That's the million-dollar question, and Cargar shows just how complicated it can be.
It does.
There's this tension between wanting to have laws that protect everyone and the fact that people come from such diverse backgrounds.
Right.
But what Cargar seems to say is that while keeping people safe is super important, the law can't ignore culture. Every case needs to be looked at carefully, considering all the facts and the cultures involved.
That's a good point. So going back to why we started this deep dive, I think looking at State v. Cargar has really shown us how tricky it can be to apply law when people come from different cultures.
Absolutely.
And how important tools like the de minimis statute are in making sure the outcome is fair.
It's a great case study.
Yeah, State v. Cargar. It's a perfect example of how law and culture clash and how sometimes the law has to be flexible to get to the right result.
It really makes you think about what other areas of law might be affected by cultural differences.
That's true.
And even more importantly, how can people in the legal field become more culturally aware?
That's a good question.
Because to handle these complex situations fairly and thoughtfully, they need to understand and respect different cultures.
Definitely food for thought.
It is. It really is.
Thanks for joining me on this deep dive.
My pleasure.
And to everyone listening, keep those brains working, and we'll catch you next time on The Deep Dive.
See you.